Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome. This is Telling Towards Life, and I am Lissy, and this is Justin. And we are extremely happy, as always, to be doing this weekly thing where we wander into conversation with one another and join up with you in the world. So thank you for being here. We have a wonderful source that Justin's brought us this week, which we're going to get to, but we wanted to make a little special announcement. It's the 18th of May, 2025. And if you're listening kind of in this time realm, we want to let you know that on the 8th of June, we are going to have an event where we turn towards life together with you in a Zoom scenario. So if you want to come, we would love you to come. The timing is going to be 2 to 4 p.m. UK time, which is 6 o'clock in the morning, kind of LA time, 9 a.m. New York time, and 10 p.m. Singapore time. And we know that there are listeners from all of those regions, and that's why I'm saying all the different time zones. We'd love you to come and join us. It will be live. We won't send a recording of the thing, because mostly it'll be about you all meeting one another as well as meeting us in person, but virtually. And we are going to turn towards life with one another, and you're going to see what it's like to have a taster of this community, as are we, and to feel joined around this shared purpose of being in reflective conversation for our deepening, our learning, our development, our reflection with one another. So we're extremely excited about that. It's the 8th of June, and we are going to be putting it on our website. So you can go to our website, turningtowards.life. And if you sign up to the emails there, you will also get it into your inbox as well as a result of this episode coming out. So we would love you to come and sign up and be with us. And we're very excited. And it's in a couple of weeks' time. So please, we'll mention it next time as well that we're here. But we'd love you to come and sign up with us. And we will turn towards life together for the first time. Instead of just Justin and I being here, we'll all be here together. So please do come. We'd love that. And Justin, is there anything else to say about that way of signing up?
Yes, there are a couple of things to say. I'm very excited about this. So this week is our 397th week of Turning Towards Life. And the reason we're doing this on the 8th of June is our 400th week. And Lizzie, you and I thought it would be really wonderful thing to do to celebrate 400 by being with people. So 8th of June is week 400. So you're very welcome to join us for week 400. Those of you who get the email, look out in this week's email for a link to sign up. If you don't yet get the email, there's a big button on turningtowards.life where you can join the email, and look out beneath the sunny, smiley picture of you and I, Lizzie, that fronts the website. Underneath that, there will be a button that you can press that says something like, sign up for Turning Towards Life 400 live on the 8th of June. And that's the one to press, and you'll find your way in there. And we will also put a link in the show notes. You may be able to click straight through if you're on a device where you can read the show notes for this week and the coming weeks. And Lizzie, we have done this once before. A few years ago, we had a go at doing a Turning Towards Life live event, a sort of early experiment, and it was very sweet, and it was really exciting and interesting and rich to gather a group of people together. And you and I did our week's Turning Towards Life live with the group, and then everybody had a chance to meet one another, and then everybody had a chance to do the same practice that we've been doing, which was to take a text and to learn from it about themselves and about the text and about one another and be in relationship. And we think that's what we're going to do, or at least something like it. So it's very exciting. And I bumped into somebody at a party last night who told me that he knew we were doing this in a few weeks' time. And I appreciated very much the sense that people are talking about this. There's some excitement. And there are many, many, many of you, far many more than we have ever had a chance to meet. I realize, Lizzie, that in a way we know everybody in one sense because we're in relationship, and there's another way in which there are so many people that we don't know. So you're really welcome to come. It will be warm and welcoming and interesting and deepening, and really everyone's welcome. and you don't have to commit to doing anything other than just coming for that couple of hours on a Sunday to be with us if you choose to join. So it's 4 weeks time from today, this podcast going out. Very exciting. So should we turn to this week's source? So you can always find the source on the website, in our Facebook group, in the show notes. And we're going to, in a moment, do what we always do with Turning Towards Life, which is to take up this practice of, Lizzie, you and I will read, and then we'll enter into a conversation together. And it's a long time, Lizzie, since we've spoken about the principle of this, which I want to just say a tiny little bit about, which is we've both read this source, but we haven't prepared a script or some kind of list of talking points. This practice is always the practice of putting a source in between the two of us and really having what is, to start with, a three-way conversation. It's a conversation of me with you and you with me, and it's also a conversation between us and the source. And then all kinds of things always unfold. And it seems to me they unfold by the arts of paying attention and being present and receptive and not pushing or forcing and taking our time. And it's kind of magical what comes. So we'll put the source in between us in a second. And this is a poem by Galway Kinnell. And I want to thank our dear friend Sahar for bringing this to us. And here it is. It's called Two Set Out on Their Journey. We sit side by side, brother and sister, and read the book of what will be, while a breeze blows the pages over. Desolate, odd, cheerful even, and otherwise. When we come to our own story, the happy beginning, the ending we don't know yet, the 10,000 acts encumbering the days between, we will read every page of it. If an ancestor has pressed a love flower for us, it will lie hidden between the pages of the slow going, where only those who adore the story ever read. When the time comes to shut the book and set out, we will take childhood's laughter as far as we can into the days to come, until another laughter sounds back from the place where our next bodies will have risen and will be telling tales of what seemed deadly serious once, offering to us oldening wayfarers the light heart, now made of time and sorrow, that we started with.
Thank you, Justin. So this is Two Set Out on Their Journey by Galway Kinnell. We sit side by side, brother and sister, and read the book of what will be, while a breeze blows the pages over, desolate, odd, cheerful even, and otherwise. When we come to our own story, the happy beginning, the ending we don't know yet, the 10,000 acts encumbering the days between, we will read every page of it. If an ancestor has pressed a love flower for us, it will lie hidden between the pages of the slow going, where only those who adore the story ever read. When the time comes to shut the book and set out, we will take childhood's laughter as far as we can into the days to come, until another laughter sounds back from the place where our next bodies will have risen, and will be telling tales of what seemed deadly serious once, offering to us oldening wayfarers the light heart, now made of time and sorrow, that we started with.
Thanks, Lizzie. You know, I thought as you were reading about all the things I might say about what's in the poem, and I'm sure we'll come to some of that. But actually what I want to say to you, Lizzie, is something about what it's like to hear it. And I realize that these words have me feel so much less alone. And that's very curious in and of itself. Like, what's going on that these words have me feel less alone? And if I find my way into it a bit, what I can see is that maybe because, oh, I don't know, maybe because we each, and obviously it's true of me, but it's true of everyone, we experience our lives right here where we are. Like, I can only experience my life. Actually, it's not entirely true what I'm about to say, but I suppose the most ordinary way to experience my life is like right here in this body, in this location. Particularly when I'm in difficulty or in something really intense that's not the most welcome thing, like if I'm grieving, or if I'm confused, or if I'm frightened, or if I don't know where my life is going, which mostly I don't in many ways, it's very easy to feel alone in it, like somehow this is only happening to me, this weird experience of being alive, this completely discombobulating and strange something that is being born and being in the midst of some life and then dying, but I'm between those. And then I hear Galway Canal's words, and I hear you read them, Lizzie, and suddenly there's another person reading them. And the biggest felt sense I get is, oh, I've when I feel that way, when I feel like somehow the world is just happening to me, I'm this sort of player, it's all coming my way, and somehow it's unique, which in many ways it is, but if I take it to be the only, it's incredibly lonely and confusing place to be. And I feel like Galway is saying, this is all of us. That experience, that's all of us. And so I become unalone in recognizing that my experience of the complete weirdness of being a living person is everyone's experience in some way, because we're all in the same something. And that is an enormous relief. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's it's a very beautiful, and so many of our sources do that, Justin, for me. And I think that's part of the kind of the bigger purpose of all of this, and why anyone listens in a way, is because we're kind of validating each other's experience of being human by talking about things and the kind of weird depths of things that we don't belong to our kind of common cultural norm of a conversation. And I really love that. And I love that that is one of the kind of attributes, I think, of the way a source is chosen by you or by me, is that it has some kind of connecting power. And this too, for me, is so moving, this poem. And in a way, the feeling of it to me is, it's like my heart aches when I receive it. Because there's a set of invitations in here that feel so important to me. And I really have been, we had a death really sadly this week, Justin, in our close circle of family friends. And this line about, we will be telling tales of what seemed deadly serious once, offering to us oldening wayfarers a light heart. And bringing back the heart that we started with. And I really this week have been saying to myself, even if there are like terrible financial difficulties or horrible relational awkwardness or fighting or anything, when someone is no longer in their body very suddenly and way too young, and that all of the grief around that has really been leading me repeatedly back to, well, yes, I know that this circumstance feels serious and it feels hard. And it might be like my inner turmoil or my inner critic getting a hold of me or whatever it is. But in the context of impermanence and us being this vulnerable as a human being, that at any time illness could come and find us and we could be gone really quickly. These things that seem deadly serious once, maybe I don't have to be floored by them. Maybe I can hold them in a way that they don't take me out. And I want to live a life where I'm honest with myself and validate when I do feel really afraid and really terrible and all those things. But I feel like somehow this poem comes to remind us that when we're gone, and maybe we are heading for our next bodies, but there's a veil between those things. And in this experience, as you're saying, Justin, this life is the only one I know. I mean, maybe I have inklings of other places and times and things, but this is the one that I know, and this is where the people that I'm deeply attached to exist in their bodies. And I'm here, I'm really fully here. And so if it all could go, how deadly serious am I really going to take the things that are not a light heart and not this beautiful sorrow that is deeply part of, inherent in being human? So I'm really, and that's not separate from this invitation to wonder if the ancestors have left us a pressed flower. We're only going to notice it if we are right here. And so there's something about, if I'm not taking my life deadly seriously, maybe there's a greater chance, and I think there is, of me noticing what the pressed flower is that the ancestor has left for us, because I'm relating to life in a way that I'm deeply interested in the moment to moment ordinariness, and I'm really in it, so that I can receive the gifts that go beyond this life and come from somewhere else in the form of a pressed flower. And I'm not taking life so seriously that I forget my light heart and also the sorrow that resides there that makes me human and available and vulnerable and willing to let go of the deadly seriousness and acknowledge the impermanence of being human.
As you talk about your family friend, Lizzie, this conversation in this poem seems to me about something about, and about how do we, recognizing that it is a possible one at once to be properly and truthfully grief-stricken and heartbroken, and to set that in a bigger context, like both are necessary. And when we're in real difficulty, if we turn away from what's here, if we turn away from our sorrow or our delight at what's here because we don't want to bear the costs of being alive, we miss something. So there's really including what's here with the requisite degree of weight. And at the same time, and I think this is what one of the absolute genius things about this poem is, setting it in the bigger arc of things. Like this, what this poem does for me is it honors this moment of being here with you, and it allows me to invest it with not like a deadly seriousness, but a kind of care might be a better word. Like, can I care for this moment, whatever it brings? And then can I see that it's in the context of an entire horizon of a life, and the arc of my life and your life, whatever it brings, are very particular to us and also not unusual. I think this is also important. Like, this poem is about the rise and fall of generations and lives, one after the other, that we are an expression of. And when I am invited this way to extend my horizons to include both the beginning and the end, and I think that's where this thing will be telling tales of what seemed deadly serious once it was. It was deadly serious. And in this context, it's not deadly serious in the same way. It's got a different kind of tone to it when held, if we can allow ourselves to hold the arc of the whole. And some of us will have lives that are longer than we expect, and some of us lives will have much shorter than we hope for. And some of us will have lives mostly marked by sort of a sense of being trouble-free, and some of us will have lives full of trouble and difficulty. And any of those could be any of us. I mean, we don't know. And it's a relief to me to start to take on the story, and a really joyful relief of what if the way this poem begins is reading the book before we even come to the beginning of our own story. So there's a magic line When we come to our own story, the happy beginning and the ending we don't know yet, and the 10,000 acts, something else that he says, I'll come to it in a moment. And I really think that there's a gift here is to start to be ones who at least now and again will widen our horizons to hold the whole and to hold the rhythm of actually, it's another bit that's occurring to me. I may know very little. You talked about what it's like to really be invested in this life, like we know one another and we might have inklings of lives before and afterwards because life is very mysterious like that. But really our bodily sense is here. But can I yet even hold my life as one wave in a series of waves that go on into deep time and go on long after me? And then my life, sort of the drama of it, takes on a whole different significance and I can fight it less and agree to it more. Agree to being a living one in the midst of this vastness rather than somehow imagine that I'm meant to have some kind of escape clause from the actual experiences of being alive.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think the gift that I'm receiving at the moment, Justin, and it seems to be coming from lots of different places, is at the end of this wonderful piece by Galway Canal, where he says, "The light heart, now made of time and sorrow that we started with." I feel like there's a continual reminder that comes my way anyway, all the time. So I'm feeling like it's one of the, you know, those threads of your life that keeps being served to pull on is the origins of what a heart is like. And I think it's also partly because I'm with young children every day at the moment. It feels like our beginnings are light-hearted. And somehow that's what gives me this ability when I can find it to be in that relationship to life in the bigger arc like you're talking about. And to keep deepening my faith in joy and like unreasonable joy, not happiness because of the circumstance I'm in, but in those kind of unreasonable moments when everything seems to be going wrong and yet there's lightness and a kind of being that allows me to be in relationship to life like that, where I'm not wholly bogged down by all of my problems, but I can leave them alone for a while and be, and I can come back to them, but there's a space that isn't all of the things, all of the issues, all of the difficulties, all of the stuff. And that is a reliable, solid, credible place that is real for the human heart. It's an experience of the human heart, an originalness in each of us that is substantial, that we can rely on as being there, that there is always that originalness. And somehow that, to me at the moment, and has been, I think, all my life when I really look at it, is the greatest teacher to remind me that joyfulness and being light and feeling like sunshine is a valid, real, deep, human, original gift or something.
One of the teachers of the Jewish tradition who I've loved, Lizzie, who wrote in a way that was available to so many people, a man called Abraham Joshua Heschel, who was very famous for being involved in the American Civil Rights Movement and marching with Martin Luther King. He was in the midst of some really difficult things in his life, and he wrote about how the primary call for being a human is to live in a state of radical amazement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this poem is an invitation into radical amazement. Like if you just take a moment to notice what we're in the middle of. Like here at You and I, somehow we got born, and even all of that, like how that happens, that humans' lives appear, is extraordinary. And then here we are traveling through time, and all kinds of things are happening, and we're playing our part, and we're growing older, and we're making relationships, and we're gaining and losing, and we can shape our own intention in many ways, but the world is beyond our grasp in many ways, and everything's impermanent, and everything's rising and falling all the time. It's bonkers and astonishing that any of it should be and any of it should be in this way, and that we should be here to witness it and to experience it. And not only that, but this mistake that I alluded to at the beginning about somehow thinking I'm on my own in this, this is only happening to me, but then blowing it wide apart and getting that not only am I here and you're here, but there are billions of others experiencing the world, but also before us, there were others, and before them, there were others, and before them, there were others, and before them, there were others. And if you go far enough back, we're not even humans anymore. We're something pre-being human, and that goes all the way back. And then there's all these other beings around us, and that's just on this planet. And I feel like Garwick-Cannell is inviting us into that radical amazement, but without a kind of simplistic, well, let's just amp up amazement, and that means that we won't feel sorrow. Like it all belongs here. I love this line, offering to us oldening wayfarers the light heart now made of time and sorrow. If we'll let ourselves become made of time and sorrow as we go. And then I'm really in resonance with you here about this, that there's, and I do think we have been talking about this for 397 weeks, this part of it, is there's something underneath the surface current that we are that's timeless. There's something timeless about all of us. And that there are times and ways that we can make contact with that in us, which is timeless. The same thing that Garwick-Cannell talks about, that's made of time and sorrow, that's the same thing that we started with, that you were just talking about. When we're born, it's already here. And there are lots of different kinds of language people have for this. We're not just evolutionary gene machines or something. We're not just meat computers. We're not even just what's happening now. We're a kind of timelessness. And we forget that we're that kind of timelessness. But when we remember, something really important happens about contact and relationship and depth that's much more true about who we are than a lot of the drama than a lot of what we get caught up with. And I'm not saying we shouldn't get caught up with those things. I suppose I'm just making a case for our remembering ourselves as we travel through the flow of time.
Yeah, and Justin, as you're talking, what I'm feeling is this, what turning towards life is for me, which is that somehow being here with you and doing this enables me to kind of like zoom out of my life for a moment, be in the conversation, and receive something particular each time, and then kind of come back into my life in a fuller way every single time. There's something about what happens in the reflective practice and the conversation and in listening to you and receiving you and having that impact, what I say, and being in this connecting thing takes me away from my life because it's quiet here and there's no one else in the room and, you know, all those things. And this Garwick-Cannell is with us and between us, and we're in a kind of contemplative space. And the content of it is rich and beautiful and inviting and makes me wonder about things and curiosity-fies me about everything and undoes me and all that. And then after this, I will walk back into some form of beautiful mayhem in a very different way. And I'm realizing that that's really the gold in it, is that, and funnily enough, that this poem is kind of talking about that thing too, of there's the kind of the immediate experience of life, and there's this whole other perspective, which is a huge perspective here, that this isn't even looking at a year of my life, it's looking at the whole of life, of everyone's life, and the not even the end that doesn't end there, it's the bodies we will yet inhabit and the bodies we left behind once in another life too. And I'm really appreciating the power of coming in and coming out and bringing gifts from either realm to the other. And that feels like what Turning Towards Life is all about.
Just as we come to an end, Lizzie, maybe another way of saying it, and maybe this also connects up with all the work that we do in Third Space, teaching, coaching, and practicing coaching, it's the same thing, which is that it's an invitation to center ourselves in a different place in us, like to the one who looks out at life as a result of these conversations is different to the one who came in. Often we find a different place to come at our lives. And I want to just try just a little experiment, and we'll see how this goes. I'll say in a moment. Before I do, just a reminder, everyone, if you're still listening at this point, we really welcome you to sign up to our emails on the Turning Towards Life website, to, if you're listening in May or early June 2025, to join us on the 8th of June, which you can find on our website. And we're also heading towards a whole season of Turning Towards Life Live, which will be a monthly program of events starting in September that you can find out on the website. Just a reminder of that. The experiment, Lizzie, was I want to read the poem again to end. So here we go. Two Set Out of Their Journey by Galway Cannell. We sit side by side, brother and sister, and read the book of what will be, while a breeze blows the pages over, desolate, odd, cheerful even, and otherwise. And when we come to our own story, the happy beginning, the ending we don't know yet, the 10,000 acts encumbering the days between, we will read every page of it. If an ancestor has pressed a love flower for us, it will lie hidden between the pages of the slow going, where only those who adore the story ever read. When the time comes to shut the book and set out, we will take childhood's laughter as far as we can into the days to come, until another laughter sounds back from the place where our next bodies will have risen and will be telling tales of what seemed deadly serious once, offering to us oldening wayfarers the light heart, now made of time and sorrow, that we started with. Thank you, Lizzie, and thank you everyone for being with us. We will be back, all being well, for episode 398 next week, and maybe we'll get to meet some of you in a few weeks' time.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks, Justin.